Certainly better than those $2,995 two-day seminars. Okay, it's the 12th of May, and we're near the end. We only got 2 weeks of... George, why are you laughing?
What?
He's paying, he's bought four $2,000 seminars. Is that yours?
No, but I'm
you can use it. Okay. All right. We're going to be with the last. Whoa! You know, the end of the semester is upon us, and the parking lot gets really empty, and people come in very late and kind of shuffle in and don't know what's going on. But anyway, the chapter 15 bonus is due. That's an bonus assignment. You don't have to turn it in. Turn in everything. Everything you got. I don't care how late it is. I can't guarantee how much I'll give you. But I want you to do it at the very least. The final exam. What day is the final exam? May 28th. It's a Thursday. It's the day before graduation. If you can't make it, contact me immediately. It is at 8 a.m. What? I know. In finals week, they change the schedule. If you cannot make it, or even if you come at 9:30, I'll stick around till noon, certainly. So contact me, and we will get something to work out. Work something out. Now, what's going to be on the final? There will be specific questions about the stuff we are covering since the exam number four, certainly. Options and futures. We're going to start margining, shorting, brokerage accounts today, account types. And then next, that'll be today and Thursday. On Tuesday is our last day of class because they kicked out the last Thursday. Why they do that, I don't know. But they do. And so we'll cover real estate and other investment alternatives next Tuesday. You can bring 2 pages of handwritten notes. There'll be general questions on all other chapters. Bring your 2 formula sheets for chapters 6 and 10 because there may be questions from chapters 6 and 10, kind of like the questions we had on exam number 4. Scantron calculator, any questions? Yes.
So a week from today is the last class, and then the final is...
And then the final is a week and 2 days later. Remember our motto, folks: in nonsense is strength. If it makes sense, we don't do it here at Southwestern. Wait till you get to state. It's even crazier. It's hard to believe, but it's even crazier. I'm sorry, Daniel? Did you?
Yeah.
That's it? So yeah.
There's this one Thursday and Tuesday.
Yeah, that's it. I know. We're at the end of the semester, just it hits us like a 2x4. And we're still up 4.5%. Not bad. Procter & Gamble, folks. Now's the time to buy Procter & Gamble. Dollar's strong. International markets are hurting. Now's the time to buy. Because it ain't going nowhere, folks. I don't know. You young folks, do you use Gillette or do you use Harry's? Gillette? Have you seen this? They're definitely going after the millennials with these ads for Harry's razors. You buy it, what? Dollar Shave Club? Is that Harry's? No, something else. Harry's is going after... It's all internet-based. So they're just bypassing all the stores and everything, and I don't know if the millennials will go after that stuff. I don't know. But that's just one part. You know, Tide, Pampers, Head and Shoulders, Crest, toothpaste. Yes?
So we got up to 7%?
Yeah, we hit 7% a few weeks ago before the boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Which is... coulda, woulda, shoulda. Should have sold if you're a trader. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Any questions about that? We're almost into the end of the semester. It's so exciting because the end of the semester is exciting, folks. Because today, where is it? Here it is. Today we're going to start chapter 2. Wait a minute, yes?
Now the final is not just those 3 chapters.
Right. There'll be specific questions on the material that we've done since the last exam, but general questions on all other chapters. So were you remotely sober when we discussed stocks and mutual funds and bonds and short-term investments? Because you have to notice stuff. You're the expert for your family and friends, right? You can't let them down, right? Right, because they're going to say, you took introduction to investments. What the hell is a mutual fund? And you've got to be able to explain it to them. And don't go over the head. Don't start talking about stuff that they don't. You got to do it good. Ease them into it gently. Yes.
You said remotely sober.
Remotely sober. Yes. If you were remotely sober, for this class, then you should do well in the final. Many, you know, it'll be very similar to the other exams, very similar, but just more questions. Okay, so we're going to start chapter 2. What? This is the end of the semester. It doesn't make any sense. Well, look, I strongly disagree with how the book puts this at the beginning of the semester. I know why they do it. I understand the reasoning. They want to turn it into a contest. They want you to be doing what we did together on your own. They want you to buy and sell and buy and sell, and they turn it into a contest, and they start with 100,000 or 500,000 for each individual, and then, you know, at the end of the semester, whoever wins gets an ice crusher or something. I don't know, something stupid. But I strongly disagree with that. I believe you need to understand your investments thoroughly before you start buying and selling them. Plus, they go into tremendous detail about shorting and margining, which is confusing, folks. It's confusing. Plus, it's not even that smart, in my humble opinion, for investors, for long-term oriented investors. I know George disagrees. He wants me to explain to you that margining and shorting can make you very, very wealthy very quickly after you've lost all your money. And yes. So we're going to focus on margin accounts and selling short, if only to scare you away from it. Because as we said before, instruction about syphilis is not an instruction to get syphilis. And that's exactly the truth with margining and shorting. Margining, okay, there's some valid reasons. Sure, look, before we even get started, Peter Lynch says never short a stock. So who am I to argue with Peter Lynch, right? I didn't do 29% for 12 years. Let's start first by talking about brokerage firms. You got to put your money somewhere, right? The full-service traditional brokerage firms such as Merrill Stench and Morgan Stupin will provide investment recommendations, and they'll send you a bottle of wine on your birthday and take you golfing and to the steakhouse, and they'll charge you $100 a trade or more. Do you want to deal with these people? Oh, by the way, do you have at least $50,000 or $100,000 to invest? And by the way, I just heard somebody who said, well, she told me that this broker, she inherited this amount from her parents, and that he was their broker for many years. He said, well, he doesn't take a client for less than $500,000. And he was thinking of raising that to $1 million. Discount brokers are a dying breed. They used to be all over the place, but now you'll still see them, AG Edwards, Edward Jones, LP, Elp Financial. They often call them mom-and-pop shops. Well, for various reasons, it is harder and harder for them to compete. So the last standing big discount broker is Schwab. And Schwab is actually, I think they're a pretty decent shop. They're pretty decent. They do not engage in that kickbacks, or at least they didn't as of a couple years ago. I haven't talked to them since. And then the deep discount brokers are the ones you see advertised on the Infernal Net, Scottrade, Ameritrade, E-Trade, who else? Come on. Oh, Fidelity and Vanguard. Somebody else? T. Rowe Price? Do they have a brokerage firm? That's a mutual fund company. Do they have a brokerage account with them now? Can you have because Fidelity and Vanguard are not stupid. They've opened up with their own brokerage firms. And Fidelity did it, and Vanguard said, oh, okay, let's do that too. So what can you expect to pay for each? What kind of service? The deep discount folks don't want to talk to you, folks. They want everything done over the internet. If you call them up and Schwab and want to talk to a broker, they're going to add $28 or $30 to the trade. So instead of $7, it'll be $37 or $35. And that's what you expect. You can expect, if you're going to get help, you should expect to pay for it. The full service are going to they're going to charge you accordingly. Commissions, then and now. Traditionally, all brokerage firms made their money from commissions. As we said, full service brokers up to $100 a trade. The discount brokers started in 1975 at 45, then the 29, 19, 30, and I think Schwab is down to $9 a trade. Anybody use Schwab? Anybody use? I think they're down to $9 a trade. The deep discount brokers, $5, $9. And as we said, Fidelity and Vanguard have opened up their own brokerage firms. And I think they did this because they want you to get involved with their ETFs. They want to sell you their ETFs because, boy, they're really cheap. They don't have to do anything other than make sure they have as much stock in the S&P 500 stocks that are on the list. But the problem was you as a customer had to pay your brokerage firm a fee, a commission, every time you bought the exchange-traded fund. So if you go open up an account there, they don't charge you commission on their own ETFs. Very smart, folks. Very smart marketing move on their case. And a couple of companies experimented with $0 commissions. $0 commissions, right? Well, one disappeared, and the other one now charges $5 a trade. Wait a minute. How can a brokerage firm make any money with a $0 commission? Have you thought about that, folks? How somebody can make money with zero commission? How can they make money with $5 or $7 a trade? Do you remember this slide from chapter 5? No? Can you read that? First, whenever they do this, whenever they use all uppercase, it's to make it look like it's important, realizing it, you won't read it. Because it's hard to read uppercase. All uppercase is good for a title, one line. But when you put it in prose, you put it in the book, it makes it very difficult to read. But remember I did the plain song because it reminds me of a Gregorian chant. Trade receives, Scott Trade receives remuneration for directing orders to particular broker dealers or market centers for execution, which means they're sending their trades to certain places and those places are turning around and kicking them back money. They're making, and the broker dealers, the market makers, the dealers, are making money off the spread. They're making money off the markup or markdown. Markup when you buy it, markdown when you sell it. And so that's how they make their money. And we danced around this topic, and I don't really don't want to spend a lot of time on it because I don't understand that much, but you might have heard of the book Flash Boys. Have you heard of the book Flash Boys? If you guys like to read, it's actually a pretty good book. It's written by this guy. Do you remember the John Merriweather story I told you at the very beginning of the semester about the guy who they played liar's poker and the one guy bet him $1 million and the other guy bet him $10 million? It's written by the same guy, and he's an excellent writer. And he tries to get his arms, and he even in the book he says, look, I don't know, because it's totally opaque. But now more and more the world is run by these high-frequency traders. All the people are gone. You know, all the yelling and screaming, that's all gone. It's all done by computers. And these guys and gals interject themselves in between you and your trade and are somehow stealing pennies from everyone. They are. The SEC knows it. And they can't really do a whole lot about it because at the same time, they've lowered costs tremendously. But as we said, more and more of that cost is being hidden and being turned around and kicked back because these people are supposedly they're stealing anywhere between $5 and $15 billion from everybody who in trades. And the mutual fund companies, by the way, are not happy about this. They've done their best, and he outlines what they've done in the Flash Boys book. So let's say they're stealing $9 or $10 billion. Let's pick another number. And that means they're stealing it from each and every one of us who sells, buys and sells a security. It's a lot of money, right? Put it in perspective. There are trillions of dollars traded every day. Every day. And this is the same amount, roughly, that people bet on the NCAA March Madness basketball finals. Okay? So that's, in the grand scheme of things, it's not right. The Securities Exchange Commission knows it. They don't know what to do about it because at the same time, they're taking this. They call it a tax. It's basically a tax, but the government's not gaining it. These high-frequency traders are. So, and what are they doing? I have a hard time explaining it and getting it right, but they're sneaking in front of you. You want to buy 100 shares of IBM. They sneak in front of you, see that you want to do that. They go out and buy it somewhere else for less and then turn around and sell it to you for more, which shouldn't be allowed. That's called front running. It wasn't allowed when the guys and gals were screaming and hollering at each other, but it happened then, and it's happening now. It just happened then a whole lot more subtly. Now they're just blatantly stealing from you. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Yes?
So do they still only charge you $7 and they make the money elsewhere?
Exactly. You get this. You pay the $7 and that's what you see.
But that's all you pay, right?
No. Because you are getting charged instead of, you know, you look at the price. First of all, you're not looking at the price. You're looking at the price 15 minutes ago, right? But let's say the best price is $20 right now. And the Securities and Exchange Commission says, you, Mr. Broker, you, Ms. Broker, have to go out and find the best price for your customer. So you put in an order for 100 shares, but you actually get $20.05. Now, it's actually less, like $20 and $0.0001 per share. So they're stealing, you know, pennies, tenths of pennies from you, but still they're stealing. And then they kick some of that back to Scottrade. Are you with me? Understand? It's called front running. It's not the only thing they do, though, folks. At the same time, they flood the market. This is where they're going after the mutual fund people. They're going after the big money managers, the pension fund managers. They flood the market with phony orders that they have no intentions of ever consummating. And then they pull them all away. They see if they can get people to figure that out. Does that make any sense? That's why you need to read the book, because I can't explain it to you well. Suffice to say that these people are taking about $10 billion from us investors every year. But that's the cost. At the same time, they've lowered, because we saw that, so it's an extra buck, right? If you pay an extra 5 cents for 100 shares, what is that, $5? Right? But if it's one penny, then it's only a dollar. And if it's less than a penny, then it's 50 cents or whatever. So it is, we are getting charged more than we think we're getting charged. You see $7 on, remember it used to be, or it still is, if you go to the big brokerage firms, it used to be that It used to be you charge, you know, 45, 29, 19, 13, and now $7 a trade with Scottrade, but you don't see the extra buck or so that they are hitting you for when you buy, and then the extra buck or so that you're getting ripped off, that you get less when you sell. Am I making myself clear? I don't know if I'm making myself clear. Yeah?
So it's 7 on top of it.
Yeah, it's 7, and then whatever the mark up when you buy and mark down when you sell is. But they don't show you that. And notice they say, the source and the amount of any compensation received by the firm in connection with your transaction will be disclosed upon request. So you could call them up and say, hey, how much more did I really pay than I should have? And they'll go, what? Because the person you probably talked to has no idea about this because they never get any calls. They'll have to probably send you to a manager who said, oh, okay, we'll get back to you on that. Oh, you wound up paying actually $7.35. Are you with me? Understand? It's the reality. I don't think they know what to do because I do my best to figure it out and I don't know what the hell's going on. And he tells you he doesn't know what's going on. He's doing his best to explain it to you. And he says, by the very nature, these companies are very, very opaque. They don't want us to know what's going on. But if it makes any sense to you, the New York Stock Exchange is no longer on Wall Street, right? It's there, but that's not where. It's all in some computer room in New Jersey. And so these high-frequency trading firms will pay the New York Stock Exchange to sit their computer right next to the New York Stock Exchange's computer, so that the length of the wire, the fiber wire, is that much closer. So that they can see your trade before somebody else sees your trade, and they can turn around and buy the shares that they want to sell to you for less and then turn around and sell them to you. Does that make sense?
You can buy as many shares as you want.
Sure.
For that $7.
Well, I think there's a limit. I think once you get above 10,000 shares, then they start charging you. But yeah, I think there's
100
to 1,000, yeah, $7. but you're getting charged an extra penny a share or whatever. Okay. Now, there are alternative methods of paying your broker. As the competition for your business has gotten fiercer, the methods of charging investors for investment services have gotten more creative. Merrill Lynch experimented with charging $3,000 per year for unlimited trades, but they don't do that anymore. And there are many other methods. The new modern-day agogo way to soak customers, charge for brokerage services is called wealth management. And we've discussed this a little bit. A wealth management account, a wrap account, a financial advisor account, but they go by various names. Instead of charging per transaction, the brokerage firms tax on a yearly 1 or 2% wealth management fee. Do you remember the mutual fund F shares? Remember the F shares? Same idea. These types of programs are being pushed by all the major full-service brokerage firms. And there are many flavors of this program. I had a student, was it last year? Last year, who came up to me. His family was very wealthy. He wasn't, but the family, you know, and he was standing to inherit something. But he showed me this statement, about 15 pages. They had about $12 million in the account, which is a substantial amount of money, right, in anybody's. A few people, $12 million. It's nothing, but for most people, that's a lot of money. And I said, well, do you understand how you're being charged? And he goes, no. And at the very last page, there was a wealth management fee, and they were charging 1%. To their credit, they weren't charging 2%, because I've seen it as high as 2%. That's $12,000. Actually, it was $10,000, right? It was $10,000 times 12 is $120,000, right? It was a little over $10,000. I said, do you understand that they're charging you $10,000 a month to manage the account? And he went, no. I said, well, here it is. This is the charge. I said, do you think your family understands this? He goes, no. So are you going to explain it to them? He goes, yes. And I haven't heard about any what happened after that, but that was Wells Fargo Advisors. Not what?
$10,000 a month.
A month. Yeah. And so this is what they're going to push. They're going to push these wealth management fees. But I'll never forget this guy saying, "Well, you send them a bottle on their birthday, take them out golfing. They're really happy with your service." Okay. The new wrinkle is performance-based wealth management. Only pay your advisor when you make money. If you don't make money, you don't pay them. The advisor receives 10 to 20% of your earnings when you make money. The advisor receives nothing when you lose money or do not make anything. This is a variation on the way hedge fund managers charge their clients. Currently marketed to high net worth investors. And this was about 10 years ago when I went to this seminar by this company called Dunham and Associates. They're based up in Del Mar here and then somewhere in Arizona. So check them out. Now they charge a minimum fee because this was before the 2008-2009 bear market where people's accounts went down 40%. It took 5 years for them to come back, some of them. So they weren't going to make any money whatsoever until the account went back up to where it was in 2007. So they've changed their tune a little bit. But how would you like to take 10 or 20% of somebody's return? That means they make 10%, you take 2% of it. If you're the broker, you're going to make a ton of money off of these people. But of course, if they don't make any money, you don't get anything. So, in other words, it's a way to say, well, look, if you make money, we make money. If you don't make money, we don't make money. Yeah.
Can the broker just make risky, like?
Well, I'm sure that happens.
Trying to make the most money for themselves.
And then run before it falls, right? Yeah, I don't like it. I'm not saying that I think it's a good idea. I don't. I like the old commission base. Because people will say, "Well, you're paid on commission." I say, "Yeah. Why don't you become a fee-only advisor and charge your clients that way?" I said, "Look, most of my clients are putting $50 a month away. I'm going to charge them $600 to $1,500 to do a full financial plan that they're going to put on their shelf and never look at again so they can put $50 a month away? No, I'll take a dollar every month from them. Thank you very much. Because that's what I get. They put $50 a month, they get a buck. Okay, you understand? So they're paying $12 for my services all year. Well, that's what I'm just look. I'm just looking at it from where the way I would, if I was going to, if I were going to buy it, what would I want to do? Would I want to pay $1,200 for a financial plan when I'm putting $50 or $100 a month away? I don't think so. And besides, they could take business 121 and learn how to do it themselves because it ain't that hard. Okay, now, how about getting rid of your broker? Forget your broker. Do you remember the dividend reinvestment plans? With the vast majority of the blue chip, large companies that should make up your pasta, your meat and potatoes, the vast majority of your portfolio, you can go directly to the company and set up a dividend reinvestment plan. And they charge you pennies, if that. We had one with SDG&E, Semper Energy. Every once in a while, they would charge us 9 cents or 7 cents, which I guess is how much it costs them to run the damn thing. The problem with that is that you wind up with 18 different statements, right? But now many companies, ShareBuilder, BetterInvesting.org is the National Association of Investors Corp. They used to run their own. Now they use FolioFN. They will, for $10 a month or whatever, it's relatively cheap, folks, they will put all your dividend reinvestment plans, all your DRIPs. I like the name, too, DRIP. Don't you want a DRIP? They'll put them all in one place so you don't have 18 different statements. Make sense? And this way, your stocks, like Johnson & Johnson and GE, and I'm not telling you to go buy those stocks, I'm talking stocks like those, and you now can determine whether a stock is like GoPro, where you're going to buy it and it's going to be a wild ride, or a company like ExxonMobil that's going to be slow and steady, and sometimes a Procter & Gamble, it'll go down. But those dividends then go back into more shares. Okay, any questions on that? Does anybody have a brokerage firm already? George, who do you use?
ShareBuilder.
Use ShareBuilder. And they let you do currency stuff, ShareBuilder?
No, that's a separate.
That's somebody different?
Yeah.
Okay, who does the ShareBuilder? I mean, who does the currency trading? FXCM.com?
Yeah.
How much do they charge every trade? $10?
Yeah, it depends.
It depends on the trade. Okay. So check them out. There's George's. Now, we're going to discuss a technique that actually does make sense in some situations. So if I sound a little curmudgeon-y, whatever that word means, you know, a little anti these things, realize that you know there is some validity to this. But some people overdo it, in my humble opinion. Most of you, when you open up your first brokerage account, will open up what is called a cash account. It's a brokerage account in which all transactions are made on a strictly cash basis. Cash accounts are the simplest arrangements. Your broker will probably not do a credit check on you because you're not borrowing anything from them. Once you've established a good relationship with your brokerage firm, most brokerage firms will allow you to purchase shares of stock even if you don't have enough cash in the account. Wait a minute, doesn't make any sense. Well, yes, it does. Remember that stock transactions close in 3 days? So you buy it today. What's today, Tuesday? You don't have to have the money into the account until Friday morning. But you got to get it there by Friday morning or else they're going to unwind and not want to deal with you anymore. But most of the deep discount brokers, they don't allow you to do this. If you don't have the money in your account today, they're not going to give you 3 days to do it. But the brokerage firm I was with, before they closed down, and now I went to the other one, they always did this. There were many Point Luma folks. They'd say, oh, just bring the check down. I don't know what we do now. And when you sell a stock, it takes 3 days to receive your money. Well, not really now. Most all brokerage firms will lend you the money for 2 or 3 days. If you sell the stock today, they know they're going to get the cash in 3 days, so they'll lend you that money if you need it. You're like, I need it today. Okay, fine. We'll sell the shares. We'll lend you the money now. and in 3 days we know we're going to get it, and we might charge you a few pennies for that because it's a 3-day loan. But a margin account is something completely different. A margin account says, oh, you can borrow money from us to invest. You can invest borrowed money. That's the idea. How does it work? Well, it's a little tricky, and we're going to learn some of the calculations. None of the calculations will be on the final, but they are on the Series 7, or at least they used to be. I'm pretty sure they're still there. This is a brokerage account in which, subject to certain limitations, securities, and we'll just mostly discuss stocks, but it's true for bonds and mutual funds. No, not mutual funds. Sorry. Can't margin mutual funds. I'm sorry. Cut that. Securities can be bought and sold on credit. If you open a margin account, the brokerage firm will do a credit check to determine your credit worthiness, since you'll be borrowing money from them. So they're going to ask for your Social Security number anyway, because they have to report to the IRS. But they're going to ask for your Social Security number. You're going to sign something saying that you say it's okay for them to go check the credit bureaus, get your FICO score and the like. The interest rate you pay on money borrowed is called the margin rate. It's actually a pretty good interest rate. It's usually prime plus 2 or prime plus 3. It's usually a little bit more than what you're going to get from your money market, depending on how much you borrow. So it's not it's better than credit cards. It's a lot better than credit cards, and usually just a little bit more than what you would receive from a money market. The margin account allows you to perform what is called margin trading. Buying on margin is another word you will hear. Buying on margin. Leveraged. There's that word again. Leveraged. We'll see that in spades next week when we look at real estate. A leveraged account. The use of borrowed funds to purchase securities. This magnifies returns, potentially, by reducing the amount of equity that the investor must come up with. If it potentially magnifies your returns, what's it going to do to your losses? Potentially magnify your losses, too. Now, this is where I start getting confused with margining. The margin is the amount that you came up with, the amount that is not borrowed. Doesn't it sound like it should be the other way around? You're buying on margin, so you're coming up with a certain amount, and then the rest is margin? No, that's not how it works. The amount that you put up, the amount that you invest, that you bring to the table, is the margin. And the amount is usually stated as a percentage. So if you were 75% margin, that means you came up with 75%, and then the other part is borrowed from the brokerage firm. That's just an example. 75% margin, 25% borrowed, 50% margin, 50% borrowed, 90% margin, 10% borrowed. Buying on margin allows the investor to use financial leverage. The use of debt financing to potentially magnify your investment returns. You're using the debt as a lever. Right? That's the idea behind leverage. People don't like that term, but we'll see it when we get to real estate. And we've already seen it with bonds a little bit. That's how we use other people's money to make our money. Buying on margin allows an investor to tap into the equity in their account without actually selling their investments and generating a commission and taxes. So let's say it's been 10, 20 years and you've built up a pretty good nest egg in your brokerage account and you want to buy a car or whatever. And you don't want to sell these shares. Well, you can borrow from your shares as if you were borrowing from a house. Have you heard of a home equity line of credit? You can borrow from the equity in your house. It's the same idea. Right? That's one use, and that's the only use I think is valid, in my humble opinion. But you can also use it to potentially leverage your returns. So buying on margin is much like buying a house. When you purchase a house, you don't come up with the total amount. You come up with 10 or 20% and finance the rest. But currently, and it's been this way for decades, the minimum is 50%. Now, your brokerage firm can make that higher for you, especially if they look at your credit report and go, ooh. But that's the minimum it must be. The margin requirement. That's what I should have written down first. Margin requirement, or the initial margin, whatever you have to put up first, must be the investor's own funds. And interestingly enough, this is set by the Federal Reserve Bank. Because the Federal Reserve Bank says, hey, you're operating like a bank. We want you to follow our rules. So you have to have at least 50% as an initial margin. That's the initial margin requirement. And supposedly they can change it, but they haven't changed it in decades. So I don't know when it ever will be changed. The margin loan is the other part. The margin loan. So the margin is the amount that you have put up, and the margin loan or the debit balance is the amount you have borrowed. Okay, so now we've been setting these things up. How the hell does it work? How would you use margining? Well, here's an example. You put up $10 for a $20 stock. Now, normally in a cash account, what would you do? You'd put up $20, right? But not if it's margin. The stock is $20, so you put up 50%, the initial margin, or $10. I should put that down here, right? This is the initial margin. I'll put that at the bottom. This guy. You know what the problem is? It's not these guys so much as it's the stuff that's on there. The stuff that's on there basically clogs up the pores. And it says black one. I tell people, don't use the black markers. Don't use the red markers. Hello? Who is it?
Yes. I just want to come in and say hello to my favorite professor.
Have a seat. We're talking about margining.
He helped me in my investments. I'm a millionaire.
About time. Yeah. Brandywine in the fourth. It's a good tip. Okay. So he never comes in. They're not actually supposed to. They're not. The dean has to tell you when they're going to come in your office. I think you can come into my class any damn time that you want.
Is he really a millionaire?
No. I don't know. Maybe he is. I don't know. If you ask him, he'll tell you. No, he hasn't. He's not one of my clients. Don't worry. But I've given him some ideas. I said, well, this is what I would do right now. But yeah, I don't think he did it. Doesn't matter. Okay, anyway, so you come up with $10 right now, and you borrow $10. Does that make sense? Okay. Normally, in a cash account, you'd have to come up with $20. Now, what if the stock zooms to $30? What happened? Well, if it were a cash account, you would have made $10 on a $20 investment. What's your absolute return? Absolute dollar return is $10. So, in a cash account, you've made $10 on a $20 investment. What is that? What rate of return is that?
50%.
You guys can do that in your head, right? 50%. But in this case, you've made $10 on a $10 investment, which is 100%. Do you understand? By margining, you can potentially magnify your returns. You made $10 on a $10 investment. This is half of what you had to come up with when you simply purchased the stock outright with your own money. Instead of a 50% return on your investment, you received a 100% return on your investment. Aren't you proud of yourself? No? No? Okay. Let's look at it again. But in the area, okay, so you guys already know what I'm talking about. You put up $10 and you borrow $10, you purchase one share of common stock for $20, same as before, but this time, what happens? It drops to 10%. To $10, I'm sorry, it drops to $10. Oops! Half of the money was yours, right? And the other half you borrowed. You have lost your entire investment because you borrowed $10 and now you still owe $10. Buying on margin potentially magnifies your gains and potentially magnifies your losses. Margin buying was one of the major contributing factors to the crash of 29. It was a new world. It was a new era. At the time, the margin requirement was only 10%. You come up with $10, you could control $90 worth of stock. And the reasoning, folks, this was the reasoning. This was the technology changes, but the people that you don't ever have to worry about stocks going down. It's a new era. Prices are only going to go up, and you only have to put 10 or 20% down for your house, right? So you should only have to put 10 or 20% down for stocks. And people were wiped out overnight. So, do you think this is even allowed? No. This scenario is not allowed. Because what will happen is long before it reaches 10 bucks, as it starts to fall, this person who did this would get what is called a margin call, which says, hey, you're losing too much money. You cannot continue with this. You either bring more cash or we're selling the stock. You tell us what to do. If you don't contact us, normally within 72 hours, it'll be sold. Yes?
I use margin a lot in my credit security because you have to have a certain amount of
capital to control.
Yeah, and they're each different amount.
And how's it worked for you? Más o menos.
But I have a thing that I have. My firm, they have a thing called Smart Margin where it alerts you.
And does it
down to a certain percentage.
Does it automatically sell?
Yeah, it'll alert you so that you don't get the margin call.
Well, no, wait. It will alert you. I mean,
yeah.
It sends you a text.
Yeah.
It sends you an email.
Yeah.
But does it automatically then cancel the transaction, kick you out of the transaction?
No.
You have to do that.
Yeah.
Before you get the margin call.
Yeah, otherwise you get the margin call.
Okay, have you gotten a margin call?
No.
Not yet.
I only got one in my practice account.
You got one in your practice account?
Yeah.
Okay, and the practice account, it doesn't actually sell it, does it? Okay. All right, we'll discuss margin calls in more detail, but you don't want a margin call, folks, okay?
Like that movie called Margin Call, I think?
I didn't see it. Probably, but it's probably, they probably make it more sexy than the way it really is. You get an email and you go, oh, and the second word, you know. Well, like, if you have a personal relationship with your broker's going to call you. Okay. So let's continue. Because margin trading is inherently more risky, margin accounts are more highly scrutinized by brokerage firms. They're going to keep their eye on you. They're going to have all these situations where they are going to contact you and say, hey, this is trouble. And if you have, oh, that's a bad one. That one goes in the trash. Sorry. If you have a restricted account, then your margin, as soon as your margin goes underneath the initial margin requirement of 50%, that changes as the Federal Reserve changes, but they haven't changed it in decades. You have what's called a restricted account. A margin account whose equity is less than the initial margin requirement, the investor may not make further margin purchases and must bring the margin back to the initial margin requirement when the securities are sold. So as soon as you go below 50%, then you're restricted. Doesn't mean you have to sell. Doesn't mean you have to back out of the transaction or bring more money. You're just restricted. You cannot make any more further margin purchases, and if you sell the securities, you got to bring them back up. Information technology has made the brokerage firm's job of scrutinizing margin clients much easier. Now the computer spits out a list of clients who are restricted. The maintenance margin. The maintenance margin is the absolute minimum. This is the minimum that you can be at. And if you go below that, it triggers a margin call. Currently set by the Federal Reserve, the maintenance margin is 25%. So the initial margin is 50%. If you go down to 25%, you trigger a margin call. Now, your brokerage firm can make it higher for you. They can look at you and say, we are going to set your maintenance margin to 30 or 35% or 40%. But they cannot let it go down below 25%. That's set by the Federal Reserve Bank. The margin call is the notification of the need to bring the equity of an account whose margin is below the maintenance margin up to the initial margin level, or to have enough security sold to reach this standard. So if you get a margin call, that means you have normally 72 hours, 3 days, to get more cash in, or you can actually bring more securities. You can bring in more stock, but most people don't do that because they only have one account. Or sell the shares because you're in trouble. You're in trouble and you're losing money, and we don't want you to lose any more because we don't want to get a postcard from Aruba after you've been wiped out, and now we owe the money because you've disappeared. If the investor does not meet the margin call in sufficient time, then the brokerage firm is authorized. You filled out a margin agreement. In the client's brokerage agreement, you sign that if this happens, they can sell it without your knowledge, without your acknowledgement, not without your knowledge. They're going to try to contact you. What happened when the tech started melting down, because have you ever heard of a stock losing 50% one day? Yeah. It happens. And in the tech bubble, when the tech bubble burst in the early 2000s, this was happening left and right. And so one company got in a lot of hot water with their clients, TD, what? Oh, Enron, that was different. That was fraud. Yeah, Enron got a lot of water, but that was because they were committing fraud. What, TD Water Closet, right? Isn't that what they're called? No, now they're called TD Ameritrade. They used to be called TD Waterhouse. TD stands for Toronto Dominion Bank, by the way. Most people don't know that. But they were sending out the email that night to their clients saying, you have a margin call. You know, you've got to contact us. You've got to do something. Either sell shares or bring more cash. TD Water, they used to be called TD Waterhouse. Then they merged with Ameritrade. Now they're TD Ameritrade. I think at the time they were TD Waterhouse. And they were sending out the email overnight, but when the market opened, they sold the shares. They didn't give you a chance to come up with more cash. They were just so worried about people losing so much money, because you can lose a ton of money. You can not only lose your money, you can lose their money. You understand? That's why they did a credit check on you. Because you can, if you lose your money, now if you lose any more, you're losing their money. Right? You lost your money, and now you're losing their money. Questions, thoughts? Is it making sense? Am I going too fast? Okay. Margin trading. Of course. If your investments do very well, then you can use the excess margin that you create in your account to purchase additional stock without having to come up with more money. What do you think of this strategy called pyramiding? I don't even like the word. The technique of using excess margin from paper profits and margin accounts to partly or fully finance the acquisition of additional securities. You like that idea? You've done well. You've leveraged your account. You've magnified your returns. Now you have excess margin. You can buy more shares without coming up with any cash. Good luck. All I can say is good luck. Paying interest on the margin loan also adds yet another drag on your investment returns. Remember, this is borrowed money. They are asking you to pay interest on it. Your margin investments must meet or exceed the interest rate in order for you to just break even. So commissions and interest, now you know why your brokerage firm is always so happy to take your calls. Because if you're paying them commissions, or maybe you're paying them the wealth management fee, and you're also paying them interest because you're borrowing money from them to buy securities. I can see you're underwhelmed. Okay. So, the question is, why would I buy on margin? And my easy answer to you, not George's answer, but my easy answer to you is you shouldn't. In my humble opinion, the risks are not worth the potential reward. However, as we said at the beginning, there is a valid, logical reason for having a margin account. A margin account allows you to temporarily borrow against your investments without having to sell them. You don't have to incur the commissions. You don't have to trigger the capital gains taxes. But you do have to pay interest. So do you think you would want a margin, your securities, your stocks?
Not stocks.
You margin your futures contracts.
Margin my foreign currency.
That's what they are, the futures contracts, right? Yeah. He's margining his futures contracts. So not only can you lose a ton of money with the futures, you can lose potentially magnify. But, hey, I wish you lots of luck, George. I hope you do well. All I can say. You were telling, I heard you were telling David about the seminar that they were trying to sell you?
Yeah, that's the last time how I found out about the firm that I use right now.
Okay, so tell us how much they wanted to charge you for how many days?
It was like a week seminar.
A week seminar? Okay, it wasn't just 2 days.
And they wanted to charge me like $5,000 to take their Forex class, which is the same thing I'm doing now with my firm.
So $5,000 for a 5-day seminar.
Yeah.
Better than $3,000 for a 2-day seminar.
Yeah. Well, the first one I went to was free, but that's how they get
you. Yeah, right. No, no, free. It's 2 hours of just trying to get you.
At the end, that's where they tell you, okay, we'll buy your credit card, and we want to know who's going to go on and who's going to not.
And then somebody, was it somebody in the firm or somebody who was an attendee?
No, somebody in the firm.
Somebody in the firm took pity on you and said, hey.
Yeah, I was told them straight up. I'm like, look, I'm just an average Joe. I don't have $5,000 or whatever. He's like, look, I shouldn't be telling you this, but.
Say it loudly so everybody can hear. I shouldn't be telling you this, but.
I shouldn't be telling you this, but here's the website. Check it out. It's called FXCM. You can start with $50 if you want, and you can start a practice account, and you can start trading, and when you feel comfortable, you can start trading. I wouldn't recommend that you start with $50.
Yeah, no, no, I wouldn't recommend it either.
I got lucky. It depends on what they started with, but I would suggest you start with at least a couple $1,000, but yeah. I would suggest you practice at least a month or two until you feel comfortable.
And you're using technical analysis. You're using squiggles on the screen.
Yeah, they have all the videos and stuff. They show you how to use the indicators. They show you technical analysis, fundamental analysis.
And do they show you any research that backs up this usage?
Well, according to their people they have, their brokers, their currency analysts and stuff.
Yeah, let's see it. Show us next. Okay, next. Well, I don't know. I got the website. I wrote it down. Right, well, let's not look it up right now. But
and you can literally start from video number one, what is Forex, and it goes through the whole spiel and everything.
You don't have to pay the $5,000. It's not the same company, though. It's a different company than the ones who are trying to sell it. Who is it trying to sell you the $5,000 five-day?
They're called Online Trading Academy or something.
Online Trading Academy, yeah. I got a link on their website. Yeah, okay, good. Okay, great. Okay, now, here's an example. Stock selling for $50. You put up 30 and borrow 20. So your initial margin is 60. Right? Your margin is 60%. If the stock rises to $80, now your margin is 75%. So you could buy more shares without putting up any money and bring that down to 50%. But if the stock falls to 25, now your margin would be 20%. Because here's the formula that you don't have to do. And on the back of the handout I gave you, I have some problems that are like the problems that you would see, or at least used to see on the Series 7. I don't know if they've changed the format. The account balance sheet is the traditional way for brokerage firms to create a margin account and keep track of the account. But it's all computerized now. And those of you with account experience will recognize this as assets equals liability plus equity, or assets minus liability equals equity. If you take an accounting, we use a balance sheet. The balance sheet also makes it easier to calculate the margin because you take the account equity divided by the total assets, and that's the margin. So here's the example from page 43 of the 6th edition. You purchase 800 shares at $50. you put up $20,000 and borrow the rest. So 50% margin. Right? This person is starting with 50% margin. And they bought 800 shares at $50 a share. That's $40,000. So their loan is $20,000. Now that doesn't change. They still owe the $20,000, but their equity is $20,000 because the assets minus liabilities equals equity. So the balance sheet must balance, right? If your shares fall to 35, well, your assets are going to fall. 800 shares times $35 a share, or $28,000. Does the loan change? No. You still owe $20,000 to the brokerage firm. So your account equity goes down to $8,000 because it must balance. Your brokerage maintenance margin is 30%. You're going to get a margin call because the equity divided by the total assets is equal to 28.6%. So these aren't really that difficult. They're not as hard as the options, I think. But for those people who hate accounting, they can be tricky. Questions? You want to do one? Yeah.
With the margin loan, how much do you end up paying back?
Well, you have to pay the $20,000 back no matter what, plus any interest that they charge you. You have to pay. Well, how much interest will normally determine by your credit score. If you have really good credit, you'll get the best. If you have bad credit, they probably won't even want to deal with you. If you have bad credit, you're probably not going to, maybe, I don't know, it's up to you, but they'll probably charge you more interest. But you have to pay that back plus any interest, plus any commissions on the trades. Now you know why your brokerage firm is always so happy to send you a bottle of wine on your birthday and take you to the steakhouse. Questions, thoughts? Do you want to do number one? Do number one?
Yeah.
You don't look excited. These, I don't know if they've changed. I really should pick up a Series 7 book. Oh, who doesn't get one? Who needs one? Okay. Vicki, pass that to Vicki, please. And here, Elizabeth. Okay, number one. You have $5,000 to invest, right? So let's do it over here. Bruce. And you want to buy Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. But you want to maximize your return. So the stock price is currently $25. So if you have $5,000 to invest, how much does that mean they will lend you? If you have $5,000 to invest, they will let you borrow $5,000 because the initial margin requirement is 50%. So that means you can buy $10,000 worth of this stock. Does that make sense, or did I lose you? Somebody said $2,500, I thought I heard.
Yeah.
No. They allow you to double the amount of money that you have to buy stuff. Because all you have to do is come up with 50%. If you come up with $5,000, 50% of $10,000 is $5,000. You understand? Not 50% of what you put in. You get to double what you put in. You get to basically double how much you are going to invest. So they're going to allow you to invest $10,000. So if the stock price is $25 a share, how many shares can you buy? At $10,000, you could buy $10,000 divided by 25, 400 shares. $10,000 divided by 25? Get your calculators out. You're going to need them. So you're going to be able to buy 400 shares. Everybody understand that? I'm sorry. I thought I heard 250. Okay. So the maximum number of shares that you can buy is 400 shares. That's a 50% margin. So let's create the accounting statement. Our assets and our liabilities and equity. So 400 shares at $25 per share equals $10,000. How much is our loan? Our loan is $5,000, and our equity is $5,000. And we calculate the margin by dividing the equity by the total assets. Everybody see that? Okay, now, if DCH falls to $17, what is your current margin? So what we need to do is recreate, so that's the first one, number 1B. So that's 1B right here. Fill out 1B, make sure everybody fills out 1B. So now what's going to happen is we're going to do 1C. Our assets and our liabilities and equity. And I'm going to use different color. I have it all blue. That was smart. Okay. If DCH falls to $17, we have 400 shares now at $17 a share. How much is our assets? 400 times 17 is?
6,800.
So our total assets now have been reduced to 6,800. Now the margin loan doesn't change. We still owe how much to the brokerage firm? $5,000. We still owe them $5,000. So what has happened to our equity? It's fallen, hasn't it? Because these have to balance. What has it fallen to? $1,800. Yikes. You with me? Understand what's happened? We lost $3,200 from going 25 down to 17. But we borrowed $5,000. So that we still have to pay back. And our initial investment of $5,000 is now worth $1,800. And how do we calculate the margin? The margin? $1,800 divided by the $6,800. Where are we? Not good. What's our... What? Yeah, we're really close to 25%. And did I put that in there? Assuming the maintenance margin is 25%, we have a margin call? No, but we're really close. We're really close. And there's a saying in the industry, never meet a margin call. What does that mean? Don't bring more cash to the table. You've lost, sell the shares, run. That doesn't mean you should do it. I'm just saying that's the saying. Make sense, folks? Make sense? You're kind of quiet. Normally, there's usually lots of questions about this. But everybody understand it? These will not be on the exam. They will not be on the exam, but they are on the Series 7. Or at least they used to be. They might have changed the format. I don't know. I really need to look that up, along with FXCM. Questions? All right, well, I'm a little bit reticent to continue because what we're going to do is we're going to go to long and short purchases. But let's get started. Let's do a little bit. Just get your appetite wet, and then we'll come back to it. Because it's even riskier than margin trading. This selling short is one of the riskiest things you can do, folks. Apart from buying options and futures. Okay. I'm gonna bug George all the time. Well, what can I say? I'm trying to save my students from getting in trouble. But long purchase. Buying long, going long. Huh? What the hell does this mean?
Well, basically means you're buying.
That's right. Going long, buying long. All the things we've done so far this semester have been long purchases. It's a transaction in which investors buy securities in the hope that they will increase in value and can be sold at a later date for a profit. This is the type of transaction that people commonly think of when they hear that someone bought the stock. Buying long is also the most common form of a transaction. and you're getting expectations of dividends or capital appreciation or both, buy low, sell high. You understand this, right? Well, you're going to... Oh, sorry. You purchase one share of common stock for $20. Again, the price rises to $30. You've made $10 on a $20 investment. That's a 50% increase. Of course, if the stock dropped $10, that'd be a 50% decrease. So everybody understands that, right? Well, dear students, that's not the only way you can make money. Selling short. Short selling. Short position. By the way, this is also called a long position. Shorting the stock. Going short. A short position. This is the sale of securities that you do not own. You borrow them from somebody else. You eventually have to repurchase them and return them to the lender. It is the opposite of going long, buying long. We are hoping that the price goes down. So instead of buy low, sell high, you sell high, buy low. See, it doesn't matter which order you do it in. If you buy low and then sell high, you're going to make money, right? If you sell high and then buy low, you're going to make money. Selling short must take place in a margin account, by definition, because you're borrowing something from the brokerage firm. In this case, you're not borrowing cash, you're borrowing stock or other securities, but mostly stock. And so, where do you get it from? Well, the brokerage firm offers up somebody else's shares. Huh? What? That doesn't make any sense. Doesn't that sound illegal? No, it happens all the time. When you put money in the bank, do they sit on it? What do? They lend it out. And the same thing is true for brokerage firms. They lend out your shares. Now, don't worry. You're protected by the Securities Investors something corporation, Protection Corporation. So if they screw up, you know, they don't make good on it. You're not going to run away. They're not going to run away. Here's how it works. You borrow the stock from another shareholder without their knowledge and sell it on the market. You receive money for selling stock that you do not own. You wait for the stock price to go down, and then you buy back the shares at a lower price. Sounds easy, right? You go to your neighbor who has this brand new riding lawnmower, and you say, "Hey, you know, can I borrow that?" And he says, "Sure." And you go to your other neighbor and say, "Hey, I know you're looking in the market for one of these brand new riding lawnmowers. I'll sell it to you for $50 or $500. And he says, "Okay." And the next day it goes on sale at Sears, and what do? You run down, you buy it for $250 and return it to your first neighbor and doesn't know the difference, except it's a different color. The shareholder you borrow the shares from never knows that the shares were borrowed. The brokerage firm does all the back office finance. It's called back office work. Financial sleight of hand. By the way, if you short a stock and that stock declares a dividend, you have to pay the dividend because the shares are gone, right? So the company is paying the dividends, but they've sold them to somebody else. So the shares are no longer at the brokerage firm. So that person's expecting to get dividends. I know that's going, "Wait a minute. This it doesn't sound like this." Yeah, I don't like it either. Most people's reaction when they first hear it, "Doesn't that sound illegal?" No, relax. It happens all the time. And so that's another reason why you don't want to sell short. Most times people sell short very risky stocks and they're not paying dividends anyway, so it doesn't matter. But if you short Exxon, you're going to have to pay those dividends. So here's how it works. You borrow the shares from somebody today and you sell those shares in the market. The money goes into your account. Sometime later, you have no choice. Sometimes later, you can hold on to... When you go long, you can hold on forever. They don't care. You can hang on to the stock forever. But when you short, eventually you're going to have to buy those shares back and return them to the person you borrowed them from. If the price goes down, you've made money. If the price goes up, you've lost money. It is the opposite of going long, buying long. So I know it's like the... Remember the call and the put, the mirror? It's the same idea. Everything is in reverse. When you make money by going up, no, you make down when you sell short. So you sell a stock short for $20. You receive $20 from the sale of your stock, even though the stock was not yours, because you borrowed it from somebody else. The stock price goes down to 10. You buy it back at $10, closing out the transaction. You give the stock back to the person you borrowed it from, and you get to keep the $10 difference. Now, what a deal. You just made $10 on a $0 investment. Huh? Doesn't work that way. Not quite. And when we come back, we'll start here, because it doesn't work that way. No one's going to let you make $10 on a $0 investment. Right? So when we come back on Thursday, we'll finish up this. We'll do one. We'll do the transaction on the worksheet. And then we might get to one of the alternative investments on Thursday. All right, so you know what's coming up. Thursday, we finish up going short. Maybe look at gold or one of the other alternative investments. Next Tuesday, we go through real estate, because that takes about 45 minutes or so. And then whatever. And then we're done. Then the final is a week and 2 days later, because there's no class next Thursday. My apologies, I didn't set up the time. The final is actually 8 o'clock. I erased it. I apologize. The time is 8 o'clock in the morning, but don't worry, I'll stay around till noon. I'll stick around. If you guys get here at 9:30, some of you walk in at 10, 10:30, I'll be around here. If you can't be here on that day, contact me. You can take it earlier or take it online. Yeah?
Are there going to be those caterpillar ratios on the final?
No, no. They're going to be the Chapter 6, Constant Perpetual, Discounted Cash Flow, Chapter 10, Bond Valuations, Bond Yields. So bring the two formula sheets from Chapters 10 and Chapter 6, and I'll have extras.
But no ratios.
No ratios. I don't think so. I'll check. I don't know. No ratios. No, there's no income statement, balance sheet, cash flow statement. No. Just those ones. Basically like exam number 4. It'll look like the calculations for exam number 4. All right, see you on Thursday. Who snuck in late?